Dorothea, dear, are you very busy?
It amuses me to think so. What is it, Celia?
Let me see what you're drawing, won't you?
Or is it a secret?
It's a folly.
Of course you can see.
It's a house.
What do you think?
It's very nice. Seems quite small.
It's a labourer's cottage, Celia.
Uncle might be interested after all when he sees how little a house can be. I could have never imagined. Might be easy to build.
I wish I had the building of it. To think of building something one could live in afterwards.
Like a snail.
Like an eagle. What is it you wanted to ask?
Dorothea, if you don't mind, suppose we looked at Mama's jewels today.
Mama's jewels?
It's 6 years since dear Mama died, and 6 months exactly since Uncle gave them to you to divide between us, and you haven't even looked at them yet. I think it may be wanting in respect to Mama's memory to just put them by and take no notice of them. I'm sorry, I may have offended you, but...
What a perfect little almanac you are, Celia. Would that be 6 calendar or 6 lunar months?
It's the last day of September now, and it was the 1st of April when Uncle gave them to you.
But I've no idea where...
They're in the cabinet.
Oh. We should never wear them, you know.
Necklaces are quite usual now. Among Christians who are stricter in some things even than you are. I think surely there are women in heaven now who wore jewels and... Mama wore them.
You'd like to wear them? Of course you would. Why didn't you say so before? But the keys, where are the keys?
They're here.
Open the cabinet and get the jewel box. Poor Kitty. You might have done so whenever you wished, you know.
One can't be sure, Dodo, how you might take things. Here it is.
Open the lid. Oh, like a dragon's hoard. Such colours.
Dodo, look. A cross with pearls.
See these? Purple amethysts. Let me fix them round your neck.
And you can wear the cross.
There. You can wear these tonight with your Indian muslin.
And you can wear the cross with your brown dress.
A cross is the last thing I'd wear as a trinket, Celia.
Then you'll think it wicked in me to wear it.
No, dear. No. Souls have complexions too. What will suit one won't suit another. I have other things to keep for Mama's sake. Her sandalwood box. Plenty of things. In fact, keep them all. They're all yours. We need discuss them no longer. There. Take away your property and dazzle Sir James tonight.
Sir James isn't interested in me, Dodo. And how can I wear ornaments if my older sister won't?
Celia, it's a little too much to ask that I should wear trinkets to keep you in countenance. If I were to wear such a necklace, the world would spin, and I'd get dizzy and lose my footing.
Yes, this suits me better. But look at this emerald set in diamonds. This would lie down and hang and suit you very well, see?
Fragments of heaven. Look. Look how the light passes through the turquoise. Like sun through water. Strange how deeply colour can penetrate. Like scent. Perhaps it's because I'm so nearsighted.
And here there's a matching ring and bracelet.
I think these emeralds are the most beautiful thing in the box.
So you would like these, Dodo. These agates are very pretty too, you know, and quieter.
I look at them and love them. And then remember what miserable men find such things and work at them in terrible darkness. And what evil men sell them and make fortunes and build great houses. Houses like this one. Yet... I shall keep these by me, for Mother's sake, and just to feed my eyes on the colour every now and then. But take the rest away, Celia. They trouble me.
And shall you wear the emeralds in company, feeling as you do about the evil men?
Perhaps. Who can tell to what level I may sink?
Oh, Dodo, don't be angry with me. I never know what might offend you these days.
Kitty, come. Kiss me. I'll enlarge my cottage by an extra floor in your honour. And I'll wear the emeralds tonight. And we'll be 2 very fine ladies indeed. Sir James will be struck blind.
There's another gentleman coming, Uncle says. Reverend Casaubon. What's he like, Dorothea? Do you know? I know he's old.
I've heard Mr. Casaubon is very interesting. A great scholar. A writer of religious history.
Oh, dear.
Look here at the drawing, Kitty. My cottage is now a palace. I think I shall make a great architect if I can get my stairs compatible. What do you think?
I think you're a sort of circumnavigator come to settle among us, Dr. Lydgate. Take the comfy seat over there and I'll make do with the bench. My study's only built for one man's comfort, you see. Now, tell me, what has brought a man of your ambition to a town such as Middlemarch? No offence at my curiosity, I hope.
No offence, fair brother.
Will you take tobacco, Doctor?
Thank you, no.
Men of your profession generally don't. Nor of mine neither, properly. Many of my enemies and some of my parishioners hold this pipe against me. They don't know how pleased the devil would be if I gave it up.
I understand. Your constitution's excitable and requires sedation. If I succumbed to drugs, I'd rush into idleness and stagnate there with all my might.
But you will take a glass of port wine.
Indeed, thank you.
What shall we drink to, Doctor? Science?
If you will. Science is my banner. Science and humanity.
Humanity and science, with all my heart. Only, may I inquire how old you are, Lydgate?
27.
As 12 years your senior, my head says that's a blazon harder to defend than any fashionable health regime. Do you look surprised?
I'm surprised to find such cynicism in a man of the cloth.
Who better than a parson to observe the worm in the apple? Think, as well as old Adam in yourself, you've got all the descendants of Adam who make up society around against you. The whole tribe clamours at your heels to be flattered and humoured.
I believe that the shortest way is to make your value felt, so that men must put up with you whether you flatter them or not.
Without a doubt. If you're sure of having the value in the first place. I never am. And? You must keep yourself independent of their power, Lydgate. Very few men have that strength, you know. I speak as one of Adam's weaker sons.
As it happens, Brooke, I'm reading Davies Agricultural Chemistry. Excellent burgundy, by the way.
Thanks, Jedham. More wine? Casamon? No? I went into science a great deal myself at one time, but I saw it wouldn't do. It leads to everything. You can let nothing alone. Science isn't for the landowner who must watch his tenants don't sell the straw, eh, Jedham?
I'm going to take one of the farms into my own hands and see if something can't be done in setting a good pattern of farming on my own estate. Do you approve of that, Miss Brooke?
Oh, yes, Sir James.
Perhaps you would show me your plans.
I should be honoured. Delighted.
A great mistake, Chetham. Going into electrifying your land and that kind of thing and making a parlour of your cowhouse, it won't do. Most expensive sort of whistle you can buy.
But, Uncle, surely it's good to spend money finding out the best use of the land.
Young women don't understand political economy. Eh, Casamon? Better spend it on a pack of hounds and a fine hunter.
Oh, Uncle.
But you are fond of riding, Miss Brooke. I saw you on Saturday cantering over the hill on a nag not worthy of you. I wish you would let me send over a chestnut horse for you to try. It's trained for a lady.
You're very kind, Sir James. Thank you. I intend to give up riding.
No, that's too hard. Your sister's given to self-mortification, Miss Celia, is she not?
I think she is these days. She likes giving up.
If that were true, Celia, my giving up would be self-indulgence, not self-mortification.
Fact is, human reason carried me a good way at one time. Human perfectibility now. Adam Smith, that kind of thing. I pulled up in time, but not too hard, else we shall be thrown back in the Dark Ages, eh? Casamon? Do you know Smith, eh? Or Southerner? A little poetry before politics, eh? Do you know Southey, Casamon?
No. I have no leisure for literature just now.
I'm sure you give up riding for some high, generous motive, Miss Brooke.
No, I didn't mean to say that of myself. Really, Sir James?
I am using up my eyesight on old characters.
You need a reader, Casaubon.
I am fastidious in voices. I cannot endure listening to an imperfect reader.
My niece has an excellent voice. Eh, Chatham? Let her read, dear Casaubon.
Uncle.
I feed too much on the inward sources. I live too much with the dead. My mind is something like the ghost of an ancient, wandering a labyrinth and finding fragments of glory which were once the golden age, trying mentally to construct it as it used to be, in spite of ruin and confusing changes.
Oh, dear.
What is it you're researching, Mr. Casaubon?
I am in the process of producing a model, a mould, if you will, which will shape metal for the key to all mythologies, Miss Brooke. Identifying, through minute attention to detail, a common structure which will unite all ancient religions and prove they have arisen from one source.
That is heroic. That is Homeric.
Thank you, Miss Brooke.
You see? I fancy I've made a uniquely exhaustive study of the entomology of this district, Lydgate. The insects, anyway. I work on a miniature scale. You have little interest in my moths and beetles, I see. I confess to some disappointment, Doctor. In my egoism, I had imagined countryside jaunts with you and net and jar.
I've never had time to give myself much to natural history, Fairbrother. Forgive me. I was early infected with an interest in medical discovery. I have no hobby besides. I have oceans to explore there.
How did you catch the seafaring infection?
One wet day in the vacation at my guardian's home, when I ran out of novels, I happened on a set of books. A dusty old cyclopedia on the highest shelf. I took one down, and the first page I opened had the heading of anatomy. And the first passage was a treatise on the valves of the heart. I was only 12, but I knew valvi meant folding doors in Latin. And there it was.
The light on the road to Damascus.
You will rescind that resolution about the horse, Miss Brooke. Riding's the best of exercise for a lady.
I agree. It will do Celia much good, if she'll take to it. Bring the horse for Celia, Sir James.
Dodo!
Very well. But I should like to know your reasons, Miss Brooke. Come, you cannot think horsemanship wrong.
It's possible I should think it wrong. For me.
But why?
We must not inquire too curiously into motives. Miss Brooke understands, I think, we must keep the germinating grain away from the light.
Thank you, Mr. Casaubon.
I saw vividly in that moment the heart was a living house of perfectly articulated structures, and structure became my passion. But the chambers of the heart are mapped already by a Frenchman, and the French are already in hot pursuit of the next quarry, the one I hunt. What is the nature and structure of the primitive tissue? That question is the wind in the sails of my life, Fairbrother. Hunting that key is all my religion.
You're at a starting point which makes many a man's career a fine subject for betting, Dr. Lydgate. But don't be too sure of keeping your aloofness without a struggle, my friend. We Middlemarchers are not so tame as you take us to be. You'll discover that we will have our opinions.
How very ugly Mr. Casaubon is. He's so sallow.
Celia, he's one of the most distinguished-looking men I ever saw. He looks like the portrait of Locke.
Had Locke those two white moles with hairs in them?
Oh, I dare say, when common people looked at him. You would prefer a man with the complexion of a suckling pig, I suppose.
I wonder you show temper, Dorothea. And if you're referring to Sir James, I think him very handsome and kind. He had to make do with me after dinner, even though he's decided to look at your cottage plans and spend money on his own estate, and you seem so pleased with him for that. You were talking at great length to Mr. Casaubon.
Celia, have you ever looked at a man and seen the great soul in his face?
Has Mr. Casaubon a great soul?
Yes, I believe he has. When we talk, he thinks with me. Or rather, he thinks a whole world of which my thought is but a poor twopenny mirror.
Dorothea, you quite despise Sir James, even though he's determined to do everything you wish. And to be frank, I think he'd be unhappy marrying someone who had so many religious scruples and unpredictable notions. It would be like filling one's home with spilt needles. Where would one sit, or walk, or eat?
Marrying? Celia, whatever do you mean? He thinks of me as a future sister-in-law, that's all.
Pray do not make that mistake any longer, Dodo. When Tantrip was brushing my hair the other day, she said that Sir James was to marry the eldest Miss Brooke.
How can you let Tantrip talk such gossip to you, Celia?
Everyone expects it. And now Sir James expects it too because of the plans and your approving of him. You're very slow about such things, Dodo, for all you're so clever with notions.
It's very painful. I can't show him my drawings after all. How can he have expected... I never agreed with him about anything but the cottages. Oh,
poor Dodo. It's very hard when it's your favourite fad to draw plans.
Fad to draw plans? Do you think I only care about my fellow creatures' houses in that way? Ugh. How can one ever do anything nobly Christian living among people with such petty thoughts?
The drawings are superb, Mr. Bulstrode. There are few things better worth the pains in a provincial town like this than the building of a fine new fever hospital. It could be the nucleus of a medical school when once we get our medical reforms. I salute your broad-minded philanthropy, sir. It's so rare to have a financial man with reformist vision. I'd be proud to join your hospital board. Let's shake on it.
I have the privilege of finding you a valuable coadjutor in the business, Dr. Lydgate. I confess to feeling alone hitherto in my philanthropic plans for Middlemarch. But a word of warning. You must not shrink from incurring a certain amount of jealousy from your brethren if you present yourself beside me as a reformer. I have had to be brave in that way.
I don't profess bravery, but I like a good fight where my principles are concerned. Especially if along the way we save a town from the worst excesses of the cholera.
Indeed. And I hope you recognise the existence of spiritual interests in your patients, too.
Certainly I do acknowledge spirituality, though such a word covers different meanings in different minds.
Quite so. You know Mr. Fairbrother? The old hospital stands in his parish.
I've met him. He seems a very bright, pleasant little fellow.
Mr. Fairbrother, my dear sir, is a man deeply painful to contemplate. I desire that his lax, free-thinking attendance at both the old and new hospitals should be superseded by Mr. Tyke, an apostolic man of exemplary opinions and conduct.
As a medical man, I have no opinion on such a point. I'm employed to cure bodies, not souls, thank God.
Ah. I will confess to you, Mr. Lydgate, that, for my part, I should have no interest in hospitals if I believed that nothing more than the body was therein administered unto. The body is a grave.
There we certainly differ, Mr. Bulstrode. But it's no concern of mine. Like you, I've chosen the path of working well in my own profession and not letting anything distract me until the goal I have in sight is also within reach. If I may help my fellow along the road without compromising my own vision... so much the better.
Mama, when Fred comes down, I wish you would not let him have red herrings. I cannot bear the smell of them all over the house at this hour in the morning.
Oh, you are the sweetest temper in the world, Rosie, but you're so tetchy with your brothers.
I am not tetchy. You never hear me speak in an unladylike way.
A woman must learn to put up with little things. You'll be married someday.
Not to anyone like Fred. I shall not marry any Middlemarch young man.
So it seems, my love. For you have as good as refused the pick of them. And if there's better to be had, I'm sure there's no girl here better deserves it.
Excuse me, Mama. I wish you would not say the pick of them. It's a rather vulgar expression.
Very likely, my dear. I never was much as a speaker. What should I say?
The best of them.
What's Rosie bullying you to say, Mama?
Oh, my boy. Kiss your mother.
Dear old lady.
Your sister says I must not say the pick of them.
Why not?
It's slang.
Is there nothing else for breakfast, Mama?
Ooh, should you like eggs, dear boy?
Eggs? No. A grilled bone.
Take some toast while I go and tell Pritchard, dear.
Really, Fred... What would you think if I came down at this time and ordered hot food?
I should think you were an uncommonly fast young lady.
Why are brothers so disagreeable?
Disagreeable is a word that describes your feelings, not my actions.
I think disagreeable describes the smell of grilled bone.
Not at all. It describes a sensation in your little nose associated with certain finicking notions taught at Miss Lemon's Academy for Ladies.
Bless you both, my dears, and don't quarrel. Why were you out so late, Fred?
Oh, I dined at Plimdale's. We had whist. Lydgate was there.
Oh, he's very gentlemanly, they say. Of excellent family.
There was a Lydgate at Oxford, but rich men may have poor cousins, you know.
It always makes a difference, though, to be of good family.
That is why his name is Tertius, I suppose. What sort of man is he?
Oh, tallish, dark, clever, talks well. Rather a prig, I think.
I can never make out what you mean by a prig.
Then come and see for yourself, Miss Rosie. He attends Uncle Featherstone, and I shall ride over there after breakfast.
To see Mary Garth, I suppose. Does Mary admire Dr. Lydgate?
Really, I can't say. If you're jealous of her, go oftener to Stone Court and eclipse her.
It's true what your brother says, Rosamond. You could have lived with Uncle Featherstone instead of Mary. So proud he is of you, and sure to do something handsome for Fred in his will. Oh, but, Fred, your father told me to say there is a fire in the smoking room now, on purpose, for you to study. It's your father's dearest wish that you should go back to college and take your degree.
Mama, I think, just today, that Fred should take me out riding.
But, Rosie, I'm only going to Stone Court.
I want the ride so much. It is indifferent to me where we go.
Ah, here comes my grilled bone. Thank you, Pritchard.
Sir.
Uncle, you're home.
Well, my dear, well. Dorothea, well. All alone, I see.
Celia has gone to play with the curate's children. What news have you brought about the sheep stealer, Uncle?
Oh, poor bunch. Well, it seems we can't get him off. He's to be hanged. Hanged, you know. I said to Casaubon, Romilly would have got him off, you know.
You went to Lowick?
Yes. I came by Lowick, you know, to lunch with Casaubon at his request. You didn't know that. And I have brought a couple of pamphlets for you.
May I see them?
Yes, here they are. Learned, no doubt, but doesn't know Romilly. He's a little buried in books, you know, Casaubon is.
A man engaged in great work must draw boundaries against the common world.
They mope, you know, these clever men. I can see Casaubon mopes. Wants a companion. A companion, you know.
It would be a great honour for anyone to be his companion.
Eh? You like him, do you? The fact is, my dear, he has a high opinion of you. Very high indeed, and he speaks uncommonly well, does Casaubon. He has deferred to me, you not being of age. However, the long and the short of it is, he wants my permission to make you an offer of marriage. Of marriage, you know. I thought it better to tell you, my dear.
Thank you, Uncle. I'm very grateful to Mr. Casaubon. If he makes me an offer, I shall accept him. I admire and honour him more than any man I ever saw.
Huh? Well, he's a good match in some respects. But Chetham now is a good match and our lands lie together.
It's impossible I should ever marry Sir James Chetham, Uncle. Pray do not mention him in that light again.
Well, but Casaubon, there's no hurry. I mean, for you. Every year we'll tell on him. He's 45 and not overstrong. Health a little taxed by study. I know nothing else against him. His income is good.
If he's frail, I would be honoured to offer him an arm to lean on. And I should not wish to have a husband my own age. I should wish to have a husband above me in judgment and all knowledge, so that I can be led to new understanding of the world.
I thought you liked your own opinion. Liked it, you know?
Well, I can't imagine myself living without some opinions. But a wise man would give me good reasons for them.
Good, good, well said. But there are oddities in things, and I must do the best for you in this, my dear, as your uncle. Never married myself. Never loved anyone enough to put my neck in a noose for them. And it is a noose. Marriage. Temper now. There's temper. And a husband likes to be master, you know.
I know I must expect trials, Uncle. Marriage is a state of higher duties. I never thought of it as a state of personal ease.
You've quite made up your mind, I see. Well, my dear, the fact is, I have a letter for you in my pocket. And I shall leave you to read it. There's no hurry, my dear. Think about it, you know.
My dear Miss Brooke, I have your guardian's permission to address you on a subject than which I have none more at heart. I am not, I trust, mistaken in the recognition of some deeper correspondence than that of date, in the fact that a consciousness of need in my own life had arisen contemporaneously with the possibility of my becoming acquainted with you. I had an impression of your eminent and perhaps exclusive fitness to supply that need. Connected, I may say, with such activity of the affections...
Celia, dearest. Mr. Casaubon is coming to dine with us tonight.
Oh, no. Is there someone else, too? I hope there's someone else. Then I shan't have to hear him eat his soup.
Celia.
And he always blinks before he speaks.
Celia.
I don't know where the lot blinked, but I'm sure his friends would have told him if he did.
Kitty, pray don't make any more observations of that kind.
Why not if they're true?
It's right to tell you, Celia, that I am engaged to marry Mr. Casaubon.
Oh, Toto. I hope you'll be very happy. Oh, don't I beg your pardon if I've said anything to hurt you. I hope you will be happy. Forgive me. Don't, it's so sad.
My dear Mr. Casaubon, I am very grateful to you for loving me and thinking me worthy to be your wife. I can look forward to no better happiness than that which would be won with yours. If I said more, it would only be the same thing set out at greater length, for I cannot now dwell on any other thought than that I may be, through life, yours devotedly, Dorothea Brooke.
Confound Brooke, confound him. He will run into any mould set out for him.
You mean, Sir James, this business of him standing for the Whigs?
I mean his letting his niece, that blooming young girl, marry Casaubon.
What's the matter with Casaubon?
Humphrey! I have no patience with you. You know you would rather dine under the hedge than with Casaubon alone.
What has that to do with Miss Brooke marrying him? She doesn't do it for my amusement.
I don't like Casaubon. He must be 50 and... look at his legs.
Confound you, handsome fellas. You think of having it all your own way in the world. You don't understand women. Mrs. C married me for my ugliness. So various it was and so amusing, it quite conquered her prudence.
Now, Cadwallader, has the man any heart?
Well, yes. Not of the melting sort, perhaps, but a sound kernel, that you may be sure of. He's educating a second cousin at a great deal of expense. Boy's mother ran away and made a poor match, a Pole, I think, and died in poverty. Casaubon found the boy and brought him home.
Well, that is good, I suppose. But as rector, do you not think you could do some good by speaking about this dreadful marriage?
You will make no impression on Humphrey, Sir James. Casaubon has got a trout stream and doesn't care for fishing it himself. Can there be a better fellow?
Well, there's something in that. It's a very good quality in a man to have a trout stream. But seriously, my dear Chetham, it's nonsensical to think I could convince Brooke. He's a good fellow, but pulpy. As you said, he will run into any mould, but he won't keep shape.
And this, my dear, is the blue room.
Ah, Casaubon, here we are. I was just saying to Celia, you will oblige Dorothea in the decorations of Lowick and that sort of thing, eh? A man lets a woman have sway there, eh?
Pray do not speak of altering anything, Uncle. I love Lowick as it is. You do like things as they are, don't you, Edward?
Indeed. But I wish you to favour me, dear Dorothea, by pointing out which room you would like to have as your boudoir.
You're very kind. But I would like all these things decided for me.
Oh, Dodo, won't you have this room? Has a bow window.
Ah, yes, this would be pretty now, with new hangings, sofas and that sort of thing. A little bare at the moment.
I like it as it is. Perhaps it was your mother's room, Edward. Isn't this her portrait?
Indeed.
And this portrait next to it, who's this?
Her elder sister. My aunt.
The sister's pretty.
It's a peculiar face. You didn't mention an aunt to me, Edward.
She made an unfortunate liaison and lived away in London. I never saw her.
Shall we not walk in the garden now?
Capital idea. It will suit you splendidly, Dorothea. Come and see.
I win, Fred!
It really is too bad to ride a broken-winded hunter and see men who are not half so good a judge of horseflesh as oneself able to throw fortunes away on bad bargains.
Hello. There's a fine brace of gigs outside Stone Court.
Oh, dear me. I hope none of my uncle's horrible relations are there.
They are, though. That's Mrs. Walls, that one. Oh. It always has black crepe on it, like a hearse. How does she manage it? Her friends can't always be dying.
Oh, the doctors can't master that cough, brother. It's just like what I have. For I'm your own sister, blood and constitution. And what I say to Brother Solomon is, it's a pity as our own brother looks to give his property outside his family to an unsteady young man who makes free with your name.
What are you driving at there, Mrs. Wall?
It's the talk of Middlemarch, how that young Fred Vincey is forever gambling at billiards since he came home.
Oh. Good gentlemanly game, Vincey. And style.
We know Vincey's father has been losing money in his manufactory for years, mayor or not, and living off his brother-in-law, banker Bulstrode.
Bulstrode? What's Bulstrode to me? I don't bank with him. Bulstrode, speculation, cha. Oh,
Mrs. Vincey and Mrs. Bulstrode are sisters, and Mrs. Vincey indulges her children past common sense. But indulging's one thing and finding money for it is another. And it's openly said in the town that young Vincey has raised money on his expectations. I don't say what expectations. Miss Garth hears me and is welcome to tell again. I know young people hang together.
No, thank you, Mrs. Wall. I dislike hearing scandal too much to repeat it.
Who's to say Fred Vincey doesn't have expectations, Sister Wall?
Hey, Missy,
Go to the window. I'll hear horses. If the doctor's come.
It's Fred and Rosie.
Oh, Rosamond too, eh? You go down and make Fred come up alone for now, Missy. I shall see some fun.
Very well.
And don't you delay him, Missy. Bulstrode.
Who's that youngster sketching by the elm tree, Casaubon?
A young relative of mine, a second cousin. The grandson, in fact, of the lady whose portrait you have been noticing. My Aunt Julia. Mr. Brooke, may I introduce you to my second cousin, Mr. Ladislaw? Will, this is Miss Brooke and Miss Celia Brooke.
Miss Brooke? Miss Celia?
I recognise you, Mr. Ladislaw. You're very like your grandmother.
Mr. Brooke.
You're an artist, Ladislaw. Let me see.
No, I only sketch a little. There's nothing there fit to be seen.
I did a little in this way myself at one time, you know. Come, this is a nice picture, no? Done with what we used to call brio, eh? What do you think, Dorothea?
I'm no judge of these things, Uncle. I never see the beauty of pictures which you say are so much prized. They are a language I can't read. I suppose I'm too ignorant.
Well, Ladislaw, you'll come to Tipton, I hope. I'll show you what I did in that way.
Shall we return to the house?
You had a bad style of teaching, you know, Dorothea. Else, this is just the thing for girls. Sketching, fine art and so on. But you took to drawing plans. You won't understand what I mean by morbidezza and that kind of thing.
We should pass on to the house, lest the young ladies become cold.
I am no judge of these things, Uncle. I never see the beauty of pictures. I suppose it's because I'm a little fool. A lovely fool. Too lovely for him. And too clever for the rest of us. How she sneers at us. But what a voice. Dear heaven, what a voice. How'd one paint a voice like that?
What's your nephew going to do with himself, Casaubon?
My cousin, you mean?
Yes, yes. In the way of a career, you know.
The answer is painfully doubtful. He declined university to study German in Heidelberg. Now he wants to go abroad again to experience culture. I would have preferred funding a legal or medical career.
Perhaps Edward. He has conscientious scruples founded on his own unfitness for such serious professions.
He has a thirst for travelling. Perhaps he may turn out a Bruce or a Mungo Park. I had a notion of that myself at one time, you know.
Oh. Hey, dear friend.
Uncle Featherstone.
Sit down, sit down. So, sir, you've been paying 10% for money which you've promised to pay off by mortgaging my land when I'm dead and gone, eh? You put my life at what, sir? 12 months, eh? And think I can't alter my will, eh?
I have never borrowed money on such an insecurity, sir. Please to explain.
No, no, sir. No, it's you must explain. I say you must contradict this story.
I have contradicted, sir. It's a silly lie.
You must bring documents, sir. Comes from an authority. Pretty good authority, I think. It's that fine religious uncle of yours.
Uncle Bulstrode?
Yeah, you must bring me writing from Bulstrode saying it isn't true.
You must be joking, sir. That's hardly a thing for a gentleman to ask.
Oh, you'd sooner offend me than Bulstrode, eh? Speculating fellow with no land. It's all one to me. I can make 5 codicils if I like. And I shall keep these banknotes you're looking at in the box here for a nest egg. It's all one to me.
I don't like Bulstrode, sir, or speculation. I never meant to show you any disrespect for any kind intentions you might have towards me.
You're in a little scrape at the billiard table, and only your uncle can help you out, eh? I know that hangdog look. So bring me a letter from Bulstrode, and we'll see if we can't back you a bit without your father knowing. Come now, that's a bargain. Give me your arm, and we'll try and walk about the room.
Yes, sir. Of course, Uncle.
Ring the bell. I want Missy to come.
In a minute, Uncle. Let me help you for now.
Always taking Missy's part.
I wonder you can take Fred's part, Mary. He is so idle and makes Papa so angry when he says he will not take orders.
It would be ridiculous as a clergyman. And why shouldn't I take his part? He would take mine. He's the only person who takes the least trouble to oblige me. He brings me all these books.
What amuses you?
Looking in the mirror. What a brown patch I am beside you, Rosie.
Beauty is of very little consequence in the world.
You mean my beauty?
Poor Mary, you take the kindest things ill, as if you had no prospects. But, after all, dear, you may have an offer any moment from a young gentleman who may fall in love with you, seeing you almost every day.
I wouldn't marry Fred if he asked me, Rosie.
Fred? I meant that Mr. Lydgate attends on Uncle Featherstone, does he not?
Oh, Mr. Lydgate. You want to know all about him, of course.
Merely how you like him.
Like him? I'm not enough of a saint to like anyone who speaks to me without seeing me.
Oh, is he so haughty? Describe him to me.
But you will see him yourself. You know this is about the time of his visits, do you not?
Oh,
that's Mr. Featherstone, requiring we return and entertain him one way or another.
Keep on. What is it? Oh, Lydgate. At last, sir. Come in. How long have you been standing gawping there? Don't stand in the doorway, man. Come in. Meet my niece and Nevy. Miss Rosie's been singing me a song, you see. I have nothing to say against that, eh? I like it better than your physic.
Miss Vincey, your uncle said you were a fine musician.
Best in Middlemarch, eh, Fred?
I think so, sir. Mm.
Middlemarch has not a very high standard, Uncle.
Oh,
I did not realise time was passing. Fred, we must really go. Oh, where is my riding whip?
Here, on this chair, Miss Vincey. May I pass it to you? Oh,
thank you, Dr. Lydgate. You are very kind. I must go now. Good day. Come, Fred. We are late for dinner.
Oh, Doctor, you look struck dumb, sir. What do you say now about Middlemarch and our provincial lasses, eh? Eh? As Paris? Anything finer? Or London? Or Timbuktu, eh? I warned you.
Dr. Lydgate is most distinguished. It is so refreshing to meet a stranger to Middlemarch of such high breeding.
Whom it would be such a delightful duty to enslave, eh, Rosie?
Really, Fred? You do look out of temper.
Rosie, did Mary say that Mrs. Wall had said anything about me to Uncle Featherstone?
Yes, indeed she did.
What?
That you were very unsteady.
Was that all?
Really, Fred, I should think that was enough.
Did Mary say anything about me?
Why should you care what Mary says?
Because she's the best girl in the world.
I should never have thought she was a girl to fall in love with.
Girls never know what men should fall in love with.
At least let me advise you not to fall in love with her, for she says she would not marry you if you asked her. And, up, she says you'll make a preposterous clergyman.
She might have waited till I did ask her. What chance does a chap have with such bad luck? Oh, damnation. Rosie, wait up!
Go on.
Me, Mrs. Cadwallader. Is this an engagement party or a gathering at Trade Hall? Tipton looks like the floor of the exchange.
This is certainly a much more miscellaneous gathering than usual, Lady Chetton. Brooke is beginning to treat the Middlemarchers as prospective voters, I see. Professional men leering everywhere I look. Bless us! Is that the new manufacturing mayor? The one with the red face arguing with the thin, pale fellow? It is indeed. Mayor Vincey and Banker Bulstrode, tête-à-tête. Very unedifying. And there's Coroner Chichley, the coursing celebrity. Brooke will have dog races and horse auctions next. I wonder what poor Dorothea is feeling.
A fine woman, Miss Brooke, eh, Chichley? Uncommon fine woman, by God.
Not my style. I like a woman who lays herself out a little more to please us. And I like them blonde with a certain gait and a swan neck. The sister's more like, but to be honest, I'd prefer the mayor's daughter if I were a marrying man. Hey, Brooke. Where's that little Miss Vincey, eh? Let's see her paces, eh?
Well, Chichley, now, one can go too far, you know. Too far in some things. This isn't a public occasion, you know. It's for Dorothea's engagement.
And your electioneering, eh, Mr. Brooke?
A man should get to know his neighbour, Standish. My door is always open. Always open, you know.
You were in Paris, Dr. Lydgate.
I had that pleasure, Miss Brooke.
Tell me, are they so much more ahead on the continent than we are? I do so hope they are.
Ahead?
In questions of social equality, medical reforms, the franchise. What difference did the revolution make from your observations?
I hardly dare to speak on politics, Miss Brooke. The room is buzzing with intrigue around us, of the petty provincial sort. I'm advised by my friends to stay aloof and study in my own field.
I would be delighted to hear of your studies, Mr. Lydgate. Mr. Casaubon is deeply into historical research. What is your special interest?
the structure of primitive tissue. My studies were with Broussais on Bichat's use of post-mortem as a source of knowledge. I'm sorry this will bore or shock you.
Oh, no. I hunger to learn. And I'm so ignorant. Is England in the forefront of such investigations?
No. Alas, the French have the edge on us there, but I'm hoping in the future to advance myself.
You mentioned you had some particular business with me, Vincey.
Fact is, Bulstrode, somebody's cooked up a story out of spite to try and set Featherstone against Fred. You know the old man is failing and has a fancy for my boy and is likely to do something handsome for him in his will.
I must repeat, Vincey, that you have pursued a vain course with your eldest son. It is entirely from worldly vanity that you destined him for the church. Both your eldest children are the despair of their aunt, my dear Harriet, in their extravagance and idleness.
Yes, yes. Well, the long and the short of it is, someone has poisoned Featherstone against Fred and given you as their authority. The old fellow insists on a bit of a note, Bulstrode, in your handwriting, saying you don't believe Fred has been trying to borrow money on the prospect of Featherstone's land. I suppose you can have no objection to do that?
Pardon me. I have an objection. I am by no means sure your son would not act in such a way.
Fred gives me his honour. He's not a liar. I consider this very unhandsome of you. It has a nasty dog-in-the-manger look. It's this sort of thing, wanting to play bishop and banker everywhere. It's this sort of thing makes a man's name stink.
If you quarrel with me, Vincey, it will be very painful to your sister Harriet as well as to myself. I will reflect a little and mention it to my wife. I shall probably send you a letter.
Very well. As soon as you can, please. Good day, sir.
Dr. Lydgate. You're down as a Bulstrode man at this new hospital, sir. What line shall you take on this affair of the chaplaincy? You've been seen with Fairbrother around the town. But Tyke is Bulstrode's man.
I know little of either. Chichley, is it? Mm. I've met Fairbrother, but appointments are too often made a question of personal liking. The best man for the post isn't always the most agreeable. It's the hard men you need sometimes to push through a reform.
I ask hard man Brooke about that one, eh? Yeah, he's standing with the Whigs for reform. He is.
Hang your reforms. You never hear of a reform that isn't a trick to put in a new man.
Yeah. New or old, the best man for the right job is essential.
That is what I think, Mrs. Cadwallader. By the look of her, I should say poor Mrs. Renfrew ought to take drying medicines or a hot air bath.
Let her try a certain person's pamphlets. He doesn't want drying. Who, my dear? The bridegroom, Casaubon. He's certainly been drying up faster since the engagement. The flame of passion, I suppose. Really, by the side of Sir James, he looks like a death's head skinned over for the occasion. Mark my words, Lady Chetham. A year from now, that girl will hate him.
I fear she is headstrong. But James will hear nothing against Miss Brooke. He says she is the mirror of women still and continues with his cottage plans to please her.
That is his generous nature. But trust me, he will like Celia better and she appreciates him, Lady Chetham. I hope you like my little Celia too. Dear me, what a very animated conversation the courser and the lawyer seem to be having with Mr. Lydgate. We must rescue him, I think. James?
Mother?
Bring Mr. Lydgate and introduce him. I want to test his theories.
Are you weary, Edward?
A little, my dear.
Sit here by me, dear. Something troubles you.
Dorothea. I still regret that your sister is not to accompany us to Rome. You will have many lonely hours, for I shall be constrained to make the utmost use of my time during our stay, in solitude. And I should feel more at liberty if you had a companion.
You must have misunderstood me very much if you think I should not enter into the value of your time, Edward. I shall have so much to think about when alone. Pray do not be anxious about me. I could not bear to have Celia. She would be miserable. I beg you will not refer to this again.
Dorothea, my dear. The evening has taken its toll, I think.
I am... in a selfish and weak state of mind, Edward. Forgive me.
So you also do not approve of reckless cupping, Dr. Lydgate?
I think not.
Nor of incessant port wine and bark, such as the lamented Hicks prescribes?
No. But we all follow our own convictions with the best of intentions, Lady Chatham.
Very politic reply.
Thank you, Mrs. Cadwallader. Yes.
So, now, what do you think of the bride-to-be, Dr. Lydgate? I perceived you and she were locked in an animated exchange for some time.
Miss Brooke, she is a good creature, Mrs. Cadwallader. A fine girl.
But, come, you may gossip with us, for we are the Olympians. And you cannot harm a girl's chances when she is already engaged to be married.
She is a little too earnest for my taste. I think perhaps she inquires after reasons, but in fact thinks only with the heart, and falls back on a moral sense, which always suits her own particular view.
Ah, a most trenchant diagnosis, Doctor. What do you think, Lady Chatham?
I confess I am pleased with you, Mr. Lydgate. You seem to understand my constitution admirably. You must attend us at Freshet.
You might attend Humphrey and myself too, Dr. Lydgate, only we are disgracefully hearty.
Thank you, ladies. Both. And now I must retire and return to my studies.
Good evening.
You see, Lady Chatham, what bold, fresh breezes have come among us.
So, Mr. Lydgate, you are our secret eye upon high society. Tell us, how was last night's wedding party?
A thick brew of gout and gossip, Mrs. Fairbrother. I prefer taking afternoon tea with you.
Was the chaplaincy discussed?
Now, Mama, Mr. Lydgate will feel he's in the tower.
What do they say about Tyke, Fairbrother? I'm curious to know. I'm beginning to feel ignorant in my vote over this chaplaincy business.
Oh, nothing bad at all.
Why, Camden, Griffin and his wife told Winifred only today that Tyke said they should have no more coals if they went again to hear you preach.
Well then, they're not my parishioners, so I don't think my sermons are worth a coal supply. You see, Lydgate, as I warned you, Middlemarch is a hotbed of intrigue after all. I'm a party man and Bulstrode is another. If you vote for me, you'll offend Bulstrode.
What have you against Bulstrode?
I say nothing against him. Only that if you vote against him, you'll make an enemy in the town, and if you vote with him, you'll make enemies of those in the town who support me and hate Bulstrode. But you won't offend me, you know. I don't translate my own convenience into other people's duties.
Come, Fairbrother, what in honesty is the nature of your disagreement with him?
Very well. Bulstrode belongs to a narrow, ignorant set which practices what he calls spiritual religion. They want people uncomfortable rather than happy. I suppose I want them happy, even at the cost of a little self-delusion. And I don't say the hospital isn't a capital idea. As to him wanting to oust me,
disgrace.
He thinks me a mischievous fellow. He's only returning a compliment. I know only too well I'm not a model clergyman, only a decent makeshift. And I should be glad of the £40. That's the plain facts of the case. Enough. How are your voyages of discovery? I hear you recently sailed past a siren in Stone Court. Did you stop your ears?
There is a Miss Garth there.
Oh, an excellent girl. We have such hopes that she and Camden...
Mother, I meant Miss Vincey, as Lydgate well knows. But what do you think of Mary Garth?
Very quiet. I've hardly noticed her.
She's taken notice of you, though, depend upon it. She gauges everyone. I prepared her for confirmation. She's a favourite of mine. But an end to gossip. How often do we have an opportunity in Middlemarch to invite a great explorer to our home? Tell us how your research is proceeding.
And do take more cake, Mr. Lydgate. We are not the highest of society, but our sweetmeats are second to none.
You still look troubled, Lydgate. My last word on the matter is this. If you vote for Tyke, you are not to cut me in consequence. You must understand, I cannot spare you.
Good day, Bulstrode. Can we get on with this business?
Mr. Hawley, gentlemen, our distinguished member, Mr. Brooke of Tipton, is a face we all welcome, I'm sure.
Not so very often.
Any public question, you know. I am a good deal occupied as a magistrate, you know, Hawley, but I regard my time as being at the disposal of the public. The public, now. A chaplain with a salary, you know, is a very good thing. And I'm happy to come and vote for Mr. Tyke, who is an exceptional man, apostolic and eloquent and everything of that kind.
Seems to me you've been crammed with one side of the question, Mr. Brooke. You don't seem to know that one of the worthiest men we have has been chaplain here for years without pay.
Excuse me, Mr. Hawley. Mr. Brooke has been fully informed of Mr. Fairbrother's character and position.
By his enemies.
But I am sure, you know, there is no personal hostility here, gentlemen.
I'll swear there is, though.
Shall I recapitulate the considerations that should weigh on both sides?
There's no good in that, Bulstrode. We all know who we mean to vote for. I propose the matter be put to the vote at once.
Very well. If you write Tyke or Fairbrother on your slips of paper and pass them up to me, gentlemen, the matter can be settled.
Gentlemen, Mr. Chairman, apologies for being late. There was a fever case I had to attend.
And please be seated, Dr. Lydgate. I perceive the votes are equally divided at present. There is a casting vote to be given. It is yours, Mr. Lydgate. Will you be good enough to write?
Don't bother. The thing's settled now.
You seem to speak with some peculiar meaning, Mr. Hawley.
I mean you are expected to vote with Bulstrode. Do you regard that meaning as offensive?
It may be offensive to others, but I shall not desist from voting with him on that account. My paper, Mr. Chairman.
Tyke is duly elected chaplain of our new hospital. Thank you, gentlemen.
I distinctly affirm that I never made any statement to the effect that this young gentleman had borrowed money on any property that might accrue to him on Mr. Featherstone's demise. Property? Accrue? Demise? You don't suppose I believe a thing because Bulstrode writes it out fine, eh?
You asked for the letter, sir.
Well, Fred. Now what do you expect, eh? You expect a little fortune, eh?
Not at all, sir. I would expect nothing. Only you were kind enough to make mention the other day of a present.
Yeah, well, then, you're young terror, eh? Yeah. Hey. Don't you think it worth your while to count them? You take money like a lord. That's £100, that is. You look like you've been given a spoon of physic.
It's very handsome of you, sir.
I should think it is handsome. You can buy yourself a good hunter for £80 and have 20 to get yourself out of any little scrape you're in.
I assure you, sir, I'm very grateful. May I burn this letter, sir?
What? Aye. And you can go now, and mind and tell Missy to come up.
Mary.
Am I wanted upstairs?
Stay a moment. May I sit with you? Or shall I bore you? What's funny?
Oh, that you ask so meekly. I don't often get so many college men to sit with me, Fred, that I might suffer a surfeit.
I'd love to hear you, Mary. You looked so sad when I came down. It's a shame you have to be bullied by an old ogre to earn your bread.
Oh, I have an easy life compared with teaching. Perhaps Rosie should do it, though. Then she can be the princess in an ogre's castle.
Rosie?
Come, Fred. You have no right to be critical.
Do you mean anything particular just now?
No. I mean something general. Always.
Oh, just that I'm idle and extravagant.
Just, Fred. You never finished your degree, and Rosie says your father is bitterly disappointed.
I couldn't be a clergyman, Mary, you know that.
I never said you ought to be a clergyman. There are other sorts of work. You should resolve on a course and follow it.
So I could, if...
If you were sure you were not to inherit Stone Court.
Mary, why do you want to quarrel with me?
How can I quarrel with you? I should be quarrelling with all my new books. However naughty you may be to other people, you are good to me, Fred.
Because I like you. Better than anyone else in the world. But you despise me, I know.
Yes, I do. A little. There, that's Dr. Lydgate. I must go.
Mary, if you won't give me some encouragement, I'll get worse instead of better.
I will not give you any encouragement. Your friends would dislike it, and so would mine. My father would think it a disgrace if I accepted a man who got into debt and wouldn't work. Oh, Fred, you have always been so good to me. But never speak to me in that way again.
Ladislaw, come quickly with me or she will have changed her attitude. Come, come. Shh, shh, shh. Look, by the Cleopatra. What Roman antithesis, beauty in stone and beauty in flesh. She has been weeping silently. Since was force controlled by spiritual passion. She should be dressed as a nun. However, she is married. There is a ring, or I should have thought the pale Geistlicher who left her just now was her father. She's leaving. Ah, that we must follow.
No. No.
You are singular, Ladislaw. You look stuck together.
I know her.
God in Himmel, you know my Antigone?
I know. She's married to my cousin.
The Geistlicher? He looks more like an uncle.
He's my second cousin. I didn't know they were coming to Rome.
But wonderful. You will get the address and speak about my genius, and I will paint your aunt.
Oh, confound you, Naumann. She's not my aunt. And I don't know what I'll do. I'm not so brazen as you.
But, my dear, you must help me. All the universe is straining toward my picture of your great aunt or second grandmother or whatever she is. Come now, my friend. I know you will help.
Mr. Ladislaw, it's very good of you to visit us.
I was not aware that you and Mr. Casaubon were in Rome until this morning when I saw you in the Vatican Museum.
Pray, sit down. My husband goes to read in the Vatican every day and is usually away from breakfast until dinner time. You will leave your address?
You're very good. My address is on my card. Are you... You look as though... You look a little unwell, Mrs. Casaubon. Forgive me,
Rome is... I find Rome very sad sometimes. It isn't what I expected. It is divided. The past is all palaces and ruins and colossi, and the present seems all poverty. I'm too ignorant to see beneath the surface, I think. This is the spiritual and artistic centre of the world, after all. Why are you smiling?
Ah, I'm thinking of the sort of sulky figure I cut the first time I saw you. At Lowick, you annihilated my sketch with your criticism.
My criticism? Surely not. I know nothing about painting.
I suspected you of being ironic.
I was being ignorant. I would so much like to know more about art, about everything. You mean perhaps to be a painter?
No, oh no, I've quite made up my mind against it. If I don't get something at once, I find I never get it.
Mr. Casaubon has said he regretted your want of patience.
Yes, I know Mr. Casaubon's opinion. He and I differ.
Certainly you differ. I did not think of comparing you. Such persevering, devoted labour is not common.
No, indeed. And such a shame he can't read German. He could have saved himself the trouble.
What do you mean?
The Germans have forged roads into historical inquiries where the English stumble about with pocket compasses. I regret it especially because of my gratitude and respect towards my cousin.
Oh, I wish I'd learned German at Lausanne. Now I can be of no use.
Mrs. Casaubon, please, I...
Edward! Oh, my dear, sit down. You look so weary. See? Mr. Ladislaw is in Rome and has come to call on us.
Well, I shan't stay and intrude upon your leisure, sir. I only came to convey a message to you. My painting master, Herr Naumann, has been told of the presence of my benefactor and offers his studios for your inspection should you wish to bring Mrs. Casaubon for a tour. They are quite special and perhaps should not be missed. I would be happy to conduct you.
Should you like to go, my dear?
Only if it would please you, dear.
Excellent. I shall call on you tomorrow. Would 5 o'clock be convenient to you both? Excellent. Good day, sir. Mrs. Casaubon?
Edward? I've been so unhappy since we quarrelled this morning. Forgive me for speaking so hastily. I was wrong. I was impatient to be helpful, but I fear I hurt you and made the day more burdensome.
I'm glad you feel that, my dear.
But do you forgive me?
My dear Dorothea, who with repentance is not satisfied is not of heaven nor earth.
Mr. Casaubon, forgive the manners of an artist. My friend Ladislaw thinks you will pardon me, sir, if I say that a sketch of your head would be invaluable to me for my St. Thomas Aquinas. It is too much to ask, but...
You astonish me greatly, Herr Naumann. But if my poor physiognomy can be of any use to you, I shall be honoured. That is to say, if Mrs. Casaubon will not object to the delay.
Nothing would please me more, Edward. Please let us stay.
I will endeavour to arouse your interest in art, Mrs. Casaubon, if I may show you the rest of the studios.
And now, my good sir,
You'll find me a lost cause, Mr. Ladislaw.
I fear you're a heretic about art generally. How is that? I should have expected you to be sensitive to the beautiful everywhere.
I'm dull about many things. I should like to make life beautiful. I mean, everybody's life. Before I can enjoy painted objects that people are shut out from... You look aghast.
Yes, I call that the fanaticism of sympathy. The best piety is to enjoy when you can. You're doing the most, then, to save the Earth's character as a beautiful planet. Enjoyment radiates. There's no virtue in misery.
Perhaps you should be a poet.
A poet? Why?
The words, the ideas, they touch one.
I can only be a poet in flashes. True poets sustain their visions.
My dear... Mr. Naumann is asking if you would like to be sketched as well, while I rest between sessions.
I wanted to say to you, to tell you I mean to stop relying on Mr. Casaubon's generosity and go back to England shortly and work my own way. Shall you be glad?
That is fine. I respect that. I wish I could produce a painting or a poem.
You are a poem.
I'm very glad to hear it. And you are very kind.
No.
Yes. Today, you have made two people happy.
If I can ever, ever be of the slightest service to you... Oh, I fear I shall never have the opportunity.
Oh, yes, I'm sure you will. I knew we would be friends when I first saw you. Even now, you could promise you will never speak again about Mr. Casaubon's writings, as you did yesterday, to anyone. Will you promise?
Certainly, I promise.
Thank you. Bless you. Here I am, Edward.